This morning we have the privilege of having Nate Mackey, one of our ruling elders here at Old Orchard, to come tell us a testimony about his work. Nate is the co-founder of Asynchrony Solutions, a computer software company based in downtown St. Louis, which now has over 100 employees. Asynchrony writes custom software applications for a variety of government and commercial organizations and has been in business since 1999. His title at the company, CTO, which is Chief Technology Officer, means that he has the responsibility for the software, hardware, and the networks used at Asynchrony, as well as the assignments of its technical staff. Nate and his wife, Kelly, and their children have been at Old Orchard for 10 years. So Nate, come and tell us about your work.
Good morning. Thanks for the introduction. Before I start, I just want to talk about the fact that this is our 10th anniversary at Old Orchard. Actually, it's almost exactly our 10th anniversary. We started attending regularly right after the events of 9/11 in 2001, and we remember that very clearly. So it's really neat to be able to come before you today after having been here almost exactly 10 years. As Drew mentioned, I am responsible for the technical side of our business. And before I started, I'd like to tell you just one of my favorite stories from our company's history. We used to have a product, a software product that we would sell to consumers, and that would be that we had to support. We had to do tech support for it through email. And so we hired a young man pretty much right out of college to help us out with that. And as he was new and had to kind of work on his customer relationship skills, I would get copies. I'd have him send me copies of all the emails he sent out to our customers. And one day there was this particular problem where we had messed up. We had caused some issue. They were trying to register the product and it didn't work, and we had clearly made a mistake. And so he wrote them back and explained what they needed to do. And at the end, to say we were sorry, he wrote, "We would like to sincerely apologize for our incontinence." And they never wrote back and mentioned it, so I don't know if they noticed it, but I made it clear to him the correct word he should use in that case. And kids, if you don't know what incontinence mean, you can ask your parents or maybe Pastor Ron. I don't know, maybe. So as I am a technical guy, software developer by trade, a software geek, not a pastor, not totally used to doing this, I want to apologize in advance for any incontinence you might experience during this talk. So just to give you a background on me, because I think it helps you kind of see where I'm coming from. I was born in Alamogordo, New Mexico, on an Air Force base. My dad was in the Air Force at the time, and my mom and dad are actually here today. Spent my childhood, I grew up all the way through college in Mississippi, and the first thing that people ask me when they hear that is, what happened to your accent? I did used to have one. In high school, we have documented proof that I actually had a southern accent in high school. So at some point during college, I lost it, because it was after college when people started asking me that. So not totally sure what happens, and got into singing and acting and stuff in college. Maybe that knocked it out of me. But definitely grew up in a Christian home. Always remember being a member of the church, going to church every Sunday. My family was in the United Methodist Church at the time. And I specifically remember, I don't remember the age, I'm guessing I was probably about 9 years old, when one night I was reading a children's devotional book in bed, probably after I was supposed to be asleep, and read a devotional on Jesus sitting on the throne in your heart and asking Jesus to come and rule your heart, and specifically being touched by that and remembering praying and earnestly asking Jesus to come into my life. And so I kind of count that as the time when I really meant something to me and Jesus really came into my life. I've always been interested in computers. I was a big nerd all the way throughout elementary school and high school. had a great high school youth group that really kind of saved me at a critical time. I was probably going down a bad path and got involved in a youth group in Clinton, Mississippi that meant a lot to me, did great things, got really into Bible study and to discipleship, and really set the stage for a lot of the rest of my life. I went to college at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi. That was really the first time that I remember just having my faith really be shaken. Going to classes and hearing professors talk about, you know, what I knew as biblical history as either myth or vastly exaggerated versions of history. And seeing intellects around me that didn't believe what I believed really started to shake the foundations of what I was used to hearing. But I still stayed in my faith, and I met Kelly, my wife, in college, and she had also grown up in the United Methodist Church, and I had not had the ability to have the youth group that I had, so we were able to teach each other and grow together while we were there. Got married right after college, got my first computer programming job at GE, and lived in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Kelly went to Duke Divinity School to get her master's in religious education with the idea that she would become a children's minister. And as we were out there in Raleigh, and I began to meet more of these people who either didn't believe or had kind of a surface belief of Christianity, and I had heard all these things in college, doubt really started to set in. I started feeling like I needed to pick and choose out of the Bible what was true. That, you know, it was all kind of up in the air and up to you, and if that was the case, then what did it all really mean, and what was the point? And so really started to examine those things. And just when it was kind of reaching an important point, we ended up moving to St. Louis. My family, while I had been in college, my parents had moved to St. Louis, and we were really tired of traveling from Raleigh to St. Louis to visit my family and from Raleigh to Biloxi, Mississippi to visit Kelly's. And so we decided, I got an opportunity with GE to be transferred over to St. Louis, so we took it. And that was a huge change for us in many ways. One of the main things that happened, we did join a church, a United Methodist Church in St. Louis, but what really started to turn me around was listening to Christian radio in St. Louis, which hadn't really been a resource that I had in Raleigh, and hearing some really very smart, highly intellectual people that believed that the entire Bible was true. And there's a book that I read that maybe many of you have read that's called Defeating Darwinism that, amazingly enough, was key to me to just open up a whole world of orthodoxy, because once I saw how I had been deceived about how evolution was clearly the only way that intellectual people could think about the our beginnings, it really made a huge difference and made me really feel like that the Bible could be taken for what it was and not just as a bunch of stories and some truth. So as that grew, as that opportunity grew, and we were in a Sunday school class at this church with Matt and Megan Phillip, and our class was great. We did a lot of great Bible studies and learned a lot from each other and began to see more and more that our beliefs about the Bible and its truth were starting to move away from what was being preached at in the pulpit at our church and from what we saw the pastors in that church believing. And eventually, we did end up leaving that church over a specific incident where we felt like the truth of the word was really not being respected or was even truly believed by the pastors of that church. And so went on a church hunt at that point. And Megan at the time was attending Covenant Seminary and got some recommendations of some places we could go, and Old Orchard was one of the places that they recommended. So we visited once, and despite the kind of frightening nursery at the time, decided to come back, really just appreciated the community that was here, not only the truth that was being preached from the pulpit, but the community of people and the love and the authenticity of the church that we'd never really experienced before, and decided to stay. So we've been here ever since. So just kind of going back now to my business, my corporate background, I spent about 7 years in corporate information technology, doing various software development, and so a little bit of team leadership type of thing. And after that, with a coworker at a place where I was working, a guy named Steve Elfenbaum, we had an idea for a dot-com company. And this was when, you know, dot-coms were going crazy and having, you know, $2-3 billion market capital. And we had dreams of getting rich with our great idea. So in 1999, we started a company called Asynchrony, asynchrony.com, and then also Asynchrony Solutions. And we got going, and I was put in charge of the software to write the dot-com site. And we were doing that, and we were just getting rolling when the dot-com bubble burst, and all of the funding that we were able to get kind of melted away. But fortunately, we had also, at the same time, been creating a software consulting company, helping companies through the contacts that we had made through various jobs that we had had, helping them solve problems with software. And so that business actually took off, and so we just kind of moved all of our resources over to that side. So my role changed, because at first I was really just in charge of a few people developing some software. And when we decided to put that on the back burner and focus on this consulting practice, then it became more of a corporate management role of quite a few people. My partners had more business side experience than I did. I didn't really have any experience, you know, running a business, doing the financials. Mine was all really in software. And so I was able to focus on that technical side, which is where the Chief Technology Officer title came from. We decided early on that would be my focus, just making sure that the technical side of the business was doing what it needed to do. But it was a new role for me, and I hadn't had a whole lot of experience with it. Unfortunately, we grew slowly, and I was able to gain experience, and that's where I really want to talk about, is what I've learned over that process. So just to set the picture, our goals for the company always were to have pretty high standards for who we brought on. So we had high standards for hiring and for maintaining who stayed on as our employees. But then when we brought them on, we treated the employees with respect and with integrity, and pledged in the beginning to be as open as we could with who we brought on. We wanted to empower our employees to get the job done, not put a lot of management structure on top of them. So we wanted to be a really kind of flat organization and let the employees do what needed to be done for our customers. And then finally, we wanted to create a place where people would enjoy coming to work, where we, with our software development background, would have liked to come to work, and where we thought that other people like us would like it. So I dress this way today to kind of give you, this is what I might wear at a typical day at Asynchrony, although actually if I wore this, people would probably ask me why I was so dressed up. So it's a pretty loose environment, pretty relaxed, and we have a great group of people, and they really enjoy what they're doing. And so that's been kind of the goal of the company from the beginning. So that set the picture for how we were able to treat them. So right now, as of today, we've got, as was said, over 100 employees. We're doing projects for all branches of the armed services. We do a lot of work with the Department of Defense, and what we do and how we do it fits really well with government contracts and what they want from software. Last year, we were acquired by a larger government contractor who saw something good in us and wanted to incorporate it into what their capability was. But we also do a lot of commercial work. We do a lot of mobile applications for iPhones and Android devices and that kind of thing. And we like to do cutting-edge technology. That's kind of what we specialize in, is trying to be ahead of the curve on how things are going. So a lot of commercial companies who can't move as quickly like to engage us to help them with that. So as far as hiring and the people we've brought on, we have heard just from people who have come in that we've started to develop a reputation in St. Louis for having some of the best technical people in the city. And that's great. I think that's fantastic. And it really speaks to, as we brought people on and made a place that they enjoyed. They talked to their friends, and their friends tended to be the top-level people, and they only wanted to work with other high-level people, so they would recommend us to their friends. And so I think we've been able to build a place that is a pretty great place if you really want to stay on top of what's going on technically in St. Louis. So in business terms, it seems like we've done pretty well. We haven't, you know, exploded or taken over the world, but we've had a pretty successful business. So what about in spiritual terms? And so that part is a little more difficult, right? The people I started the company with, it was three brothers, Steve Elfenbaum, as I mentioned before, and his brothers Bob and David. And they came from a Jewish background. And yet, by the time we came together, they had very different beliefs. David, who's the oldest, had completely turned away from the Jewish faith, and I guess you could really describe him as Buddhist at this point. He's kind of into a lot of different alternative or Eastern religions. The middle brother, Bob, is maybe a more casual believer in Judaism, and he goes to services and kind of participates, but is not really engaged. And the youngest brother, Steve, who was the one I knew better, is really more of a religious person, of more involved in the church and truly believes what the church is preaching. So you've got a variety of beliefs here, the three of them and then me coming from a Christian background. So it was hard for us to establish a Synchrony as, you know, a Christian company or a Jewish company or anything like that. So it was a lot of that has not really been part of our company culture. However, what has been part of it is a sense of the importance of morality and integrity in the office. So even though we don't necessarily have the same beliefs when it comes to God, there's definitely a belief in treating people well, in treating our customers well, in doing the right thing that's been helpful. So even though this isn't a Christian company, you know, I still have an obligation through my faith to be a Christian leader, and I've been kind of exploring what that means. So I want to talk about some different aspects of what that's meant to me. First of all, what parts of being a Christian leader I found to not be that hard. Just from who I am and how the company is, certain aspects are not difficult. There are other things that took a little time to get right. I think we're on the right track now. But it took some time. It was not obvious right away or easy. And then finally, what's still difficult and what I'm still struggling with as a Christian leader in a secular company. So for me, part of what was always easy was just trusting God with the direction of how my career has gone, how the company is going, and just trying to generally follow his leading. I stopped trying to really push and get ahead and climb the corporate ladder when I was back in GE. I'd been there probably about a year, and I was starting to see opportunities to get involved in what was called the GE audit staff, as a group of people that would travel around the world and assess companies. They would meet with the top officials in the companies and kind of help them discover what could they do to improve. And getting on that group, even though it involved lots of travel, you were hardly home. You know, you might be home like a couple of weekends every 3 months. But getting involved in that was really like the fast track to GE leadership. And everybody's telling me this is the place to go, and you should do that. And just when I was about to get involved and just about to submit my application and feeling good about it, Kelly called me. I was at a corporate retreat. She called me and told me that she was pregnant with Bryn. And at that point, I realized there was no way that I could take a job that was going to keep me away from my family that much. So I just dropped the whole thing and said, you know what, God, I'm just going to let you guide me with this. I'm not going to just push and try to get ahead. I'm going to let you guide me with where this needs to go. And I've been able to do that all along and have reached the point where I have. Not that I'm saying that, that's all it takes, just sit back and let God do everything. To some degree it is, but I mean, I've been blessed in what he's provided me, and I recognize that it's not just simply just lazing back and being relaxed about it. But what I mean is not just trying to get every single advantage that I possibly can. Something that I've also found not to be difficult and has actually kind of come back to bite me a little bit is being honest with their employees. So I haven't, I don't have a problem being straightforward with people. And sometimes I can be a little too straightforward and say some things I probably shouldn't say or not use the right words. But I think our employees have appreciated in general the fact that they can come to me and I'm not going to give them the runaround. They're gonna hear whatever I feel like I can tell them, I'm going to tell them. Then this also means admitting my mistakes. And I think in the beginning I probably was not very good at that, and I still have my own personal issues with just being defensive in general about my decisions. But once I realize I'm wrong, I think I'm willing to admit it, even to our employees. And I think they appreciate that. Also, it was always easy for us to create the best product we can to serve our customers as well as we can. We always had a lot of pride in what we did and how we did it, and even if it sometimes meant that we didn't get the advantage as far as getting the most profit out of a particular contract, we always wanted to do the best job we could, and there was definitely agreement across the board from the folks that own the company that that's how we wanted to operate. So that always made that part easy. And then sharing our successes with our employees. Again, all of us never felt like we were in this to get as much money as we possibly could. And we were always glad to make sure people were paid fairly and, you know, use when we had done well, give it back to the employees in forms of, you know, giveaways and parties and things like that, and trying to make a better environment for them. And it's been great that my partners have also been on board with doing that and treating people that way. So it's been easy to be able to do that there as well. Now, what was hard was learning how to tell our employees when they weren't doing as well. You know, I really, every single person that came on, every technical person that comes on in a synchrony, I end up being part of the interview at one time or another. So these are people that I feel like I've gotten to know, and if we bring them on, it's because I really like them and I think they're going to be a good fit. And so it was really hard for me in that vein to, when I saw their potential, when I saw, you know, what they could be, to really come down on them and say, look, you're not performing the way that you need to, and here's what you need to be doing better. And so it took some time for me to get good at that, and it was pretty painful at first how long I would let things go on with a employee who was not performing, and to learn that not only is that harmful to them in that you're not giving them the opportunity to improve, and to do better and to create, you know, more self-confidence for themselves in the workplace, but it also damages my reputation with the other employees who see this person who's obviously not performing and that I'm not doing anything about it. So once I kind of realized that I wasn't helping anyone by just letting those kinds of things go, it was a lot easier to come forward and talk to them about it. But it's never easy to tell someone that they're not doing well. And in the same vein, deciding when it was time to break our relationship with our employees, when things just weren't working out. It was very hard for me to let people go on that basis. And we still have some struggles with it because we really appreciate everyone we have. But at some point we have to say, you know what, you're great, and it's nothing wrong with you, but this is not working out for you to be here. Maybe you need to find another place that better fits how you work or how you need things to be. And so learning to do that took a lot of time, and doing it in a way that was loving and respectful. And another really tough lesson for me was learning how to be open and honest with people when they're going to assume that you're hiding things. So because I'm in a management position and I have some influence over their compensation and their livelihood and their basic needs, there's a general suspicion that no matter what I say, I might be hiding something. Maybe it's worse than I'm saying, maybe it's better than I'm saying, whatever it is, they're not necessarily going to trust me and take everything I say on face value, no matter how honest I try to be. And that was hard for me to understand. I felt like if I told you something, you know, then I shouldn't hear in the rumor mill that everybody's thinking that there's some nefarious purpose going on in the background. No, I told you. This is what it is. And I had to learn that people just can't do that. They've got to assume, for their own self-preservation, they've got to assume that the worst possible thing is happening and how can they prepare for it. So there's a way to speak to people, and there's things that you can and can't say, because if you are totally honest with someone about, you know, say how bad something is, and they're going to think it's even worse than that, that you're hiding it, then you could cause a panic in a lot of people. So I don't want to hide things from people. I want to tell them the whole story. But sometimes I can't always do that because it's just going to make things worse and scare them even more than it should. So learning how to do that has been difficult. So what's still hard? The main difficulty for me has been in learning how to share the gospel with our employees. Because we're not a Christian company, then the culture and the conversation is not about Christianity. It's already hard to kind of get that conversation started. But further, the fact that I'm now an employer versus just a coworker changes the relationship as well. If I'm spending a lot of time one-on-one with a particular person because I'm trying to help them come to Christ, and that's obvious to people, then there's going to be perception that there's favoritism there if anything happens in that person's favor later on. So I just have to be careful with the fact that everyone's going to perceive any extra time I'm spending with a particular employee to mean that that employee is somehow protected or is going to get better assignments or get better raises or whatever it is. So it's something I have to be aware of. I have to be aware that my words carry, again, like I said, more meaning than I necessarily intend them to. People are going to read more into what I'm saying. So if I'm talking about my Christian faith and how much it means to me, that might carry this idea that, yeah, you really need to agree with me or things aren't going to go well for you. So again, I have to be careful with that as well. And, you know, honestly, there are legal issues with just being an employer and laying my faith out there for people and talking to them about coming to Christ, creating a hostile work environment if someone is really offended by that, if their beliefs are different, if they're an atheist or have a different set of beliefs. So I have to be careful about where and when I do that. Now, none of that means that I shouldn't do it at all, and I recognize that. It's just been difficult to find the right ways to do it. Now, there is one case of an employee, a young lady from China, who was there and who actually made this very easy for me. She would come and ask questions. She wanted to know about Christianity she was exploring. And Matt Phillip, who worked at Asynchrony for 10 years, she would ask him the same things. And between the two of us, I think we were able to really answer her questions. And she came to me one day out of the blue and told me that she had accepted Christ into her life and thanked me for the way that we had talked to her. And so... it can be done, you know, it is possible. So I just need to work more to find ways to do that with our employees and find the right situations. What's also hard is maintaining our company's integrity. Even though we want to be honest and we want to be open and we want to do the right thing, the fact is that in the consulting business, there's a lot of deception. It's similar to, you know, how people perceive the auto repair business, where you go in with your car and you have the mechanic tell you, yeah, not only is that thing broken, but there's these four other things that really need to be changed out as well. And then you just don't know, is that true or not true? Are they telling me that to try to get more money out of me? Software consulting is the same thing. If someone comes in with a problem and we say, well, really, you've got all these other problems that you need to deal with, a lot of companies take advantage and will do more than they need to, or waste time, or bid low, and then once you get in and the contract is signed, start explaining, oh, all these other things need to be added to your contract, and basically hold your software hostage until you pay more. So there's a lot of mistrust between people who want software built for them and the consulting agencies that do it. So having us come out and say, no, really, this is the real amount that you're going to have to spend, and these are all the things you're going to have to do, again, We come out higher than most of our competitors, and we have our customers assuming that if that's how high we're saying it is, that it's really twice that much, because consultants always try to take advantage. So it's a difficult business to have real integrity and honesty in, and we struggle with that all the time. And it's very tempting to be like everyone else, and so we have to push against that need. Not only that, but the other part about integrity that's difficult is when our employees expect things, when they expect us to treat them a particular way, and we want to do the best that we can, and they come to us and say, I really want this kind of assignment or this kind of job, or this is where I'm trying to go, and then for business reasons we can't give them what they want exactly, then it feels like we are breaking a promise with them. It feels like that to them and to me, even to some extent. So having to manage what's good for the business versus what's good for individual employees when I want to help every single one is always a difficult struggle. And again, it'd be a lot easier to just say, you know what, forget it. We don't care. This is a business. We'll just do whatever it takes to make the business run. And, if you get some advantage, good for you. That's not how we want to deal with people. But then, accordingly, that makes things more difficult. And then finally, just dealing with our employee growth and care for our employees is difficult, especially as we grow and as we have this idea that we don't want a huge management structure. The side effect of that is that we've got a lot of employees and not as many people that are just watching out for their personal growth and trying to mentor them and help them. And so it becomes a little strained for the people at the top management level to be able to do that one-on-one with our employees. And so we're trying to deal with that, and we've had situations where people have felt like they were marginalized or have fallen through the cracks and have not gotten the attention that they needed in different situations. And I've apologized for that, because it's a real problem. So it's something that we feel is important. It's important from the perspective of my Christian life to make sure that we are doing what we can to help our employees get better and to take care of them. So there's a lot of areas that God can help me improve, but there's a main goal in being a leader that really drives me, and it's been hit home by a lot of the reading I've been doing recently in the Old Testament. When you see from Joshua on throughout Israel and Judah's history, how the king loved God and how committed the king was to God made all the difference in how the people behaved. And even if the king didn't necessarily outlaw belief in God, if they just didn't observe the laws or if they did other things besides what God would have them do, then you just saw also the people beginning to just turn away. And I really want to take that to heart, that the way that my beliefs and what drives me and the influence I have is going to have a huge impact on the people in our company. And so I want to be that Christian leader for them, and I want to never forget about that or turn away from it. So just to end, I'd like to briefly read from the Westminster Larger Catechism on that really applies to this, just because I think it summarizes well what's meant from a Christian leader. And I've changed the language a little bit because it's got this subordinates and language that's a little hard to hear. So I changed it to employers and employees, just to give you a feel for what it means. And I really want to take this to heart. So for the question, what is required of employers toward their employees? It is required of employers, according to that power they receive from God and that relation wherein they stand, to love, pray for, and bless their employees, to instruct, counsel, and admonish them, countenancing, commending, and rewarding such as do well, and discountenancing, reproving, and chastising such as do ill, protecting and providing for them all things necessary for soul and body, and by grave, wise, holy, and exemplary carriage, to procure glory to God, honor to themselves, and so to preserve that authority which God hath put upon them. Let's pray. Dear God, we know that you have put every leader in their position, including myself. And we pray that you would give me and all of us who lead either in our job or our church or our family, your wisdom and the desire to be your ambassadors. Keep us from abusing our power over others, and help us to love and encourage those we lead, serving and protecting them and guiding them to draw closer to you and your kingdom. Allow us never to be satisfied with what we've done so far, but push us. Push us toward a greater love for those we serve through leadership. In your Son's name I pray. Amen.